You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Happy Tuesday, everybody. Welcome in to another edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast, where, of course, we talk about the Indiana Pacers as always. My name's Tony East. I cover the team for Forbes and the West Indianapolis Community News, and today we are continuing on with player season recaps. Last week, we took care of the bench wings, Doug McDermott, Justin Holiday. The week before, we did some youngsters, Aaron Holiday, Goga Batadze. This week, we're going to go with starting wings. So I will take Jeremy Lamb today, TJ Warren from Adam later this week. If you're interested in any free agency offseason musings, we talked about small forwards in free agency for the Pacers yesterday, so go check that out as well. But I like to talk about actual basketball, as I preface on all these intros. And I'm excited to look back on Jeremy Lamb's inaugural Pacers season and see what comes next for the heavily injured Lamb. So let's just get right into it. So the way I've been doing these is I start with some stats, then I talk about some key skills for the player, and a lot of times those two segments kind of get meshed into one thing, but more of a statistical approach the first time and a skills-based one the second time, and then talk about what comes next. And for Jeremy Lamb, he grew from, you know, he went to OKC, then to Charlotte, and obviously, you know, he wasn't really much in OKC. Those teams were title aspiration teams. He didn't play that much for them. In Charlotte, he played a lot more. They valued him as more of an asset. And he grew in scoring a lot in Charlotte as they gave him the ball more. But really, I think he was kind of overcast with how much he was asked to do in his last season in Charlotte. And I think that between his fourth and fifth year in the NBA, they really figured out that he's about a 13-a-game bench scorer, and that's his ideal role. And when they overcast him the following year, they moved him to the bench later on in the season. So the Pacers got 12.5 out of him in about the same minutes that Charlotte had him, and I think that that's about right. I think that Jeremy Lamb, for all that he is, and we'll talk about his skills as a self-creator and scorer in a second, but he's a wing in the NBA, and they're valuable, and he's good, right? But his defense had to really grow, and I know Steven Silas, now Mavs assistant, helped him along the way with that in Charlotte, but his scoring's kind of always been there, just steadily progressing as he grew in the league. But they kind of overdid it when he got good at defense, and I think this year with the Pacers, they kind of hit the sweet spot, not perfectly right. With a lot of players, you can see it when they have a spike in usage, their efficiency tanks. That means they're being asked to do too much, right? So Lamb's usage rate this season was 19.6. That was actually a career low, and his true shooting percentage was about the same as it was in past seasons. So maybe he can do a little bit more, but it seems like within the context of the Pacers' offense and the way the team plays, that he shouldn't get more. So that was a lot of numbers and words to say that I think Lamb will play fewer minutes next season, but will average about the same amount of points, and I think that that is about what can be expected of him. That 12.5 points per game, though, pretty much sums up all of what he's asked to do when he's in the on the court for the Pacers is score points, because like I said, his defense leaves a lot to, it's not bad, he's an okay defender, but he's kind of slow-footed, falls asleep away from the ball. He's really more engaged as an on-ball guy and not a good off-ball guy, but not a good passer. 2.1 assists per game is really nothing. His usage is low, but he's not out there to pass, and his steals are all just jumpy steals, right? He's not like stripping anybody, and outside of low turnovers, really all that is asked of him is score. And the problem for me with what he did is, you know, his scoring is off, or at least his valuable scoring is off the dribble, and that still happened this year. 36.8% of his made shots this season were assisted. That's the lowest percentage he's had. Second lowest percentage he's had since getting traded to the Hornets, right, and being asked to do more, and it's barely higher than one of those seasons. So he did prove that he can do more off-the-bounce stuff, which is good, and I'll talk about that in the skills section. And his three-pointers, three-quarters of those were assisted, which was a career-best number for him, right? So he got a little bit, or second best, excuse me, again. So he got a little bit more rangy, but I was going to say the concerning part is the threes weren't falling this year for him, and some of that could just be McMillan not letting him rip it as often. But 33.5%, that number kind of has to come up for him, I think, because you can only do, your ceiling is so limited if you're just mid-range all the time. And his left elbow jumper is butter smooth, perfect shot for him. And defenses kind of are willing to give it to him because it's the way the NBA is going, is like teams kind of just shy away from really defending those. You know, Lamb shot 54.3% from 10 to 16 feet. And that seems like a fluky number, but his last season in Charlotte, 52.1%. 2 seasons ago, 47.7%. 3 seasons ago, 48.1%. Right from that distance, he can just bury him. So that is a 1 point per possession shot. That's over 1.08 point per possession shot. That's really good, right? That is like that's higher than a 35% three. But just imagine if Lamb had that, how much harder he'd be to guard. And he's a decent rim finisher, not great, you know, but this was a decent year for him, 62.4% there. So if he could really get that three ball up, and I think we saw this year that he doesn't super have that in his repertoire. And some people called him a ball stopper because he would catch and kind of dribble. But I think it's just that he's not confident in his outside shot, and he likes to get to that spot at the elbow more, or get to the basket more to hit that instead of hitting that three. So I think if the three ball comes, he'd be a really polished scorer. He'd be able to hit that sweet spot of, you know, 13, 14 points. He'll probably play less minutes next season because of his injury, so maybe it'll be about 12. But that sweet spot where he takes 9 to 10 shots and gets you 13 points, and I think that's fine. You know, that's quality efficiency for guy. He doesn't get to the line often, which is a negative for to be certain, but to be able to have plus efficiency scoring-wise with his scoring repertoire being mostly twos is really a good quality player to have. That's a useful bench player. I think that a problem with Lamb this year is he was kind of the plug-and-play starter before Vic got back, and they only overlapped for, whatever, 3 games, right, before he tore his ACL. But he was a fifth guy with that group, and he's the fifth best offensive player with that group, so that makes sense. But he is more useful as a guy who has the ball more often, right? He's a scorer, so putting him with the second unit would have made more sense if that ever got to happen, but it didn't. But I'm kind of blending two things into one here, because that was some stats, some skills. I was going to move on to skills, and I have some fun stats to talk about his skills. So I'm going to take a small break before we talk about some of Jeremy Lamb's skills that he showed in year one with the Pacers. But first, I got to talk to you guys about two people. The first group of people being the lovely group over at Rock Auto. With the ever-increasing number of makes and models, it is now impossible to stock all the parts you need in a traditional chain storefront. Why endure often pointless or seemingly intimidating questioning and wait while the counterman orders the parts in his computer, choosing only the brand that his warehouse happens to carry? You have a computer with access to rockauto.com at home and in your pocket. You should just use them, because they have everything that you'll ever need for your car, whether it's your classic daily driver. Get everything you need in a few easy clicks to deliver directly to your door. The rockauto.com catalog is unique and remarkably easy to navigate. Quickly see all the parts available for your vehicle and choose the brand, specifications, and prices you prefer. Best of all, those prices always reliably low. So go to rockauto.com right now. Write "Locked On" in their "How Did You Hear About Us" box so they know that we sent you one. Check out amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need at rockauto.com. And the other people I want to talk to you about, who I've been telling you about this week, is Built Go, because they're going to help you break through your wall. What is your wall, right? I've told you guys, I'm training for a 5K, got my butt kicked this weekend on my first, like, harder workout run, but I'm training for a 5K in about a month. That is what my wall is right now. Built Go is my replacement for energy drinks to really get going and start up on these workouts. You know, it's a really natural way to get going, but I haven't even told you what it is. Built Go are these protein squeeze packages. They're really good. They're good for energy and physical energy. So it's a workout gel. It's the best one on the market. It's like 5-hour energy without that crash feeling. It's all natural. 3 delicious flavors. My favorite's been the chocolate mint so far, but the chocolate coconut was also delicious. But yeah, they combine an energy gel with protein. So it's delightful. You have to check them out. Go to builtgo.com and use the promo code LOCKED. You'll get $20 off your next order. That's builtgo.com, promo code LOCKED for $20 or 20% off. Excuse me. Let's go. Okay, so skills for Jeremy Lamb. The first thing I wanted to mention was, and this we already knew this, right? He's an off-the-dribble scorer. I mentioned that 100 times in the first section. And even if that's the only thing you're good at in the NBA, right? We're seeing this with Aaron Holiday as he grows into an NBA player, is that if you can be an off-the-dribble scorer, even if you're kind of not good at much else, you can play. Because even, like, you'll just get the ball sometimes in the flow of a possession and have a half step of space or be open for this or that, and you can just score. And if you have a defensive lapse, who cares? You make up for it with a bucket. And, yeah, you might be a negative some nights and a really negative some nights and a really positive others. You know, those kind of guys are inconsistent. But Lamb was pretty consistent all season long, hovered between 40 and 50% shooting, a remarkable number of games. So, yeah, he's a good player, and his off-the-dribble scoring keeps him in games. He's added to that again. His defense is more capable than it used to be earlier in his career and stuff like that. But really, like, this stood out to me. So of his shots this season, of all his shots, 45% of them were pull-up jumpers, which is crazy. Half of his shots were what NBA.com classified as pull-up jumpers. He hit 43.7% of those. That's a pretty good number to me. He hit 50%, 49.4 to be technical, of the two-pointers that are pull-ups. And that's those elbow jumpers I mentioned earlier, which is killer. Like I know that seems not that good, but in the context of teams kind of giving up those shots and getting a point per possession on a mid-ranger in the NBA, in the modern NBA, you know, analytics get smashed to death in the playoffs when you see these guys who are mid-range masters take over games, right? You need that guy who can take that shot and make the defense think about defending you that way. So that's one area where he's, obviously really good. The other thing, and I talked about this a lot, is, you know, his effective field goal percentage, his efficiency, late shot clock situations, 45.1% effective field goal percentage when there's 0 to 4 seconds left on the shot clock and he shoots. That's pretty good. You know, 0.9 points per possession at that late in the shot clock is a good figure. That means the defense has contained you for 20 seconds. And I always talk about this with TJ Warren and Lamb, is like one area they're really good and skillful because of their off-the-dribble creation is, okay, our play didn't work. Uh-oh, what are we going to do? We got to score. The shot clock's winding down. Let's just throw this guy the ball because he's able to create on his own and score. Again, Lamb did an okay job with that. Over 10% of his shots came at that time, right? They trust him in those scenarios, especially with that second unit. We didn't see a ton of that, but still. Yeah, and then almost a third of his shots off a 3-6 dribble. So that's a lot of stat, 30.3% off 3-6 dribbles. That's a lot of stats that tell you all the same thing, right? The Pacers want Jeremy Lamb to be a guy who does exactly what his reputation was before this season. They want him to have the ball, size it, not even necessarily size it up. He usually goes pretty quick, but size up his defender, put the ball on the floor, and rise up and score. And again, his left elbow jumper is just so money, it's ridiculous. I wish I had a shot chart picture I could show you guys on the show. I think that's his most valuable skill. It will be his whole time with the Pacers. I don't, like, his shot's kind of a lot of arms. He doesn't really jump up really high. Like, Warren's a lot more legs in his creation and shooting and more acrobatics, where Lamb is more arms. So I think that the injury won't kill, you know, his form and his ability to score from, you know, 15 feet and in. It might be, you know, from length, actually being more arms is actually worse. His three-point percentage next season might take a dip, but I want to talk about his future coming up. So that's just so impressive to be able to be that level of self-creator. Now, he needs to add some passing to that, and I think that would make him really dangerous and harder to contain, or they could put him into pick and rolls if he was able to. 2.1 assists is just not that good, especially in 28 minutes, and he didn't run that many pick and rolls, but I think that that's kind of because he can't pass. And the other skill thing that I'm going to contextualize, and this is a lack of skill more so, is his defense is just not great. So pulled up the on-off stats here for the Pacers this season. So with Jeremy Lamb on the court, the Pacers' offensive rating was 108.9. And with Jeremy Lamb off the court this season, the Pacers' offensive rating was 108. So he makes their offense better by he made their offense better by 0.9 points per 100 possessions. The defensive rating with Jeremy Lamb on the court was 109.8. If you'll notice, that is higher than the offensive rating. So yes, their net rating with Lamb in the game this season was negative. With Lamb on the bench, the defensive rating was 105.1. So that means they had a plus three net rating with him out and 0.9 with him in. So, first of all, on-off splits are reductive. They are not good indicators of a player's actual impact because they just totally strip any context of what lineup he plays with, of if he's a good fit with those groups, right? They're stupid. They're useless, right? There was a season. They're not useless, sorry. That was too extreme. There was a season with the Spurs where Kawhi Leonard, the Spurs had a worse defensive rating with him in the game than now. And that's because of the way teams would play them. That doesn't mean he's a bad defender. That means that the lineups he's in are worse at defense. But in Lamb's case, because he's a bad team defender, I think that that stands out, you know, where he makes the offensive point better. That makes sense to me, right? Because of his skills, he's not a useless shooter, so he doesn't really provide spacing, but he can hit the three and he does his own thing with the ball. He can make your offense better. Duh, that makes sense. But he makes your defense worse, and I think the eye test checks out there that it's about that 4 points worse with him in the game because, again, he can contain his guy, but his team defense concepts aren't that good. So this is an again, these numbers aren't perfect, and I understand the limitations of on-off. I gave you that Spurs example, but I actually think in this case it's a good indicator of the lack of skill he has in a team defense setting where, again, if they're playing the Blazers, for example, he might hold CJ McCollum to not do so great when CJ has the ball, but he'll get beat by a back cut. And, you know, if Jeremy Lamb gets screened, he's screwed. He's not good at defending pick and roll ball handlers. And he just makes some questionable gambles. His team defensive principles just aren't that great, which usually the Pacers are good at making guys better at that. So it's surprising that he never just truly took off that way. But regardless, I think that is the next skill development they need from him. And Scott, I don't know if, for those of you who don't know this, Scott Agnes on his Fieldhouse Files podcast covered the team for The Athletic this season, said he's heard Dan Burke's not coming back, right? And Dan Burke has been credited for a lot of the Pacers' defense and helping a lot of their players improve on that end. So maybe Lamb won't get that Pacers defensive coaching that so many other guys have built their reputations on. But that whole end of the floor, he needs some work because, you know, as I talk about skill, I think that he really needs to grow into that because outside of passing, I think that's the biggest hole in his game. He's a fine rebounder. His turnover rate is fine, you know. All the adequate, I think a lot of the words you'd use to describe Jeremy Lamb in general can be used to describe a lot of his skills. He's a low turnover guy. I mean, that's a good thing about him. His turnover rate is very low. It's been below 10% every season of his career. So that's a plus. But you know, he's an average NBA player. He's a little bit better than average NBA player. And I think a lot of the stats point to that. But you look at his self-creation numbers and you look at him play, obviously, you'll see that he is an above-average scorer and a well below average defender. So if he can take the steps forward on defense that he needs to, and that might be hard, right? He might be a step slow next year. Then he might be a little bit on the negative side as an overall player with a useful skill set still, so he'll play. And if he can add a three ball, maybe he can get to neutral. But as long as his self-creation's there, he'll always be able to get in the game. So yeah, Jeremy Lamb, interesting little player with an interesting skill set, kind of unique in the way that the NBA is currently played, right? There's not a lot. Like, DeRozan is an all-star level guy, and he's a master of the mid-range. He's so hard to guard. But there aren't a lot of DeRozan lights where it's like a much worse version of a guy who already has an antiquated, quote-unquote, it's not actually antiquated to be a mid-range scorer, but you get what I'm saying, an uncommon skill set like that in the analytics NBA. Well, Jeremy Lamb is kind of super light DeMar DeRozan, right? He's not good at defense. He really only can get his bread and butter scoring in the mid-range. DeRozan's a better passer, but you know all that stuff. He's DeRozan light, and that's such an interesting idea for a player in the current NBA. But he's still good, and I've defended DeRozan for a while too. I think DeRozan's really good, despite his limitations as a number one option. You'd never have Jeremy Lamb be a number one option on a great team, but he's a good player. And now I want to talk about what comes next for him because of that unique skill set and what he can provide for the Pacers. Let's take one more break and talk about Jeremy Lamb's future with the Pacers. So this was sort of huge news in Kevin Pritchard's end-of-season press conference. At least I did, and there wasn't a lot discussed about it because, you know, the coach got fired and they got swept, and there was a lot of depot stuff to write, you know, a lot of different stories to write about. But Jeremy Lamb might be back by December, and it sounds like next NBA season is going to start in 2021. So Jeremy Lamb might be ready to go by next season, and you know, he tore his ACL and a bunch of other muscles I've never heard of against the Raptors earlier this season in February. And because, you know, ACLs are about a year injury, or, you know, 10 to 12 months is usually the timeline given. You add in other knee injuries, right? Greg, Kevin Durant got hurt in the June finals. I think he tore his ACL. I might be wrong about that. I think Porzingis did too. Like, those guys missed more than a year. And Lamb, so I was just picturing him out for basically most of next season, although not knowing it would be pushed back at the time. But anyway, I was penciling him out for much of next season. But if he's really ready by December or even the start of next season, that's huge for the Pacers to have him back, to have him in the plans. because next season for him is going to be super, super interesting. I think he's kind of still important to that second unit, regardless of any other roster changes. Because as good as Aaron Holiday and TJ McConnell are, I think they're going to choose Aaron Holiday this time around to start the season and maybe not play McConnell. But they have the option, if Lamb is healthy, to say they lose Justin Holiday. There's two things here. Let's say they lose Justin Holiday. Now they can go McConnell and Aaron Holiday at the two and then Lamb at the three and call that your, you know, your bench perimeter guys. McDermott's your shooter flanking them. Great, you still keep the rotation. If Justin Holiday stays, and they got to try to keep him after how good he was, you can still throw Lamb at the two, Aaron Holiday at the one. But if you play McConnell, Lamb becomes more important, as I know you're missing the shooting there, but McConnell's not going to create for himself at the end of the shot clock, right? He can't really score efficiently from outside of 5 feet, whereas Lamb can. So I think his importance will be magnified if they keep McConnell and try to run out a veteran second unit. But I think not playing Aaron Holiday next year would be dumb. But regardless, this is about Jeremy Lamb. His importance to the second unit will still be there, regardless of Justin Holiday's return or not. It's not up to the Pacers if Justin Holiday stays. He's an unrestricted free agent. He can choose his team. So they can plan to have Jeremy Lamb in their second unit. They cannot plan to have Justin Holiday. So I think that is an important thing to contextualize with Lamb's future, is that because he can play two or three, right, he's 6'4", 6'5", he's taller, right, so he can be a three in the NBA now. And because he can score on his own, I think he'll be valuable with that group. But it's hard to project, right? Let's say he comes back, and because he tore his ACL, he's a worse three-point shooter and doesn't have the burst required to get to his spots, and his defense has improved. All of a sudden, he's not that good, right? He's like an average efficiency, probably below average efficiency guy who's bad on D. Then you might want to not play him at all, and that's fine. He's recovering and whatever, no biggie. But that would be something to monitor with his injury that makes his future a little more hazy. But I don't see that being the case, and I don't see them not playing him like at all. I think that would be a pretty drastic choice given the makeup of their team. But it's certainly possible, and they've got Sumner right there. So he's got to perform next year, injury or not, to keep his spot in the rotation. And another thing that's interesting about his future with the Pacers is Oladipo's future right in front of him, because he started for like almost all the season, right? He played in 46 games for the Pacers in his first year and started 42 times, right? There were four, I think he missed one game prior to Depot return that Aaron Holiday started. But, you know, Vic took his starting spot right at the end before his injury. But he started almost the whole season. They're used to having him in there in lineups, and they were good at the start of the year. So if Vic is gone, right, it's impossible to project that return, and, you know, maybe Miles is gone as well. Who knows what the starting lineup could even look like, or if they get a vet back or if they get young stuff back. He could be the starter again, right? If he's healthy and ready to go to start the season, it's not impossible that, you know, he's in the starting five next to Brogdon and Warren again. I don't think that will happen, but if Vic's holding out for some reason, or if Vic's on another team and they just get back a bunch of young stuff, right, maybe they would start him again. So I can see him playing a lot of different roles on opening night next season. And again, like I said, I know that the injury is probably going to make his three-point shot worse and his defense a little worse. It'll take him a while to get back. He tore his ACL, for God's sake. Like, it's going to take a while for him to be the Jeremy Lamb that everybody knows. But I think off the dribble scoring is such an important skill, and more so in the playoffs than the regular season, which stunk because we couldn't really see Jeremy Lamb in the postseason this year. It would have been super helpful for the Pacers, who couldn't buy a bench bucket for their lives. He could play so many roles, and that skill set is so useful that even if he is a tick worse, I think we could see him in such a variety of roles. Maybe he's the sixth man, right? Maybe he's the first guy that checks in. If they're still trying to watch Vic's minutes, which I just eye-rolled, you guys can't see me, but they're still monitoring Oladipo's minutes and his status in back-to-backs almost 2 years after the injury, then there's a bigger problem. But, you know, who knows what the deal with that is? Who knows what they decide they want their rotation to be, what guards they even want to play with second unit? There's such a logjam there that I can see him playing such a variety of roles. And I think if he can just maintain about the same level, and maybe even a little bit worse, right? Like I just said, or not just said, I said this in the first segment, but he shoots like over 50% from 10 to 16 feet. If that number remains about around 50%, right, if he's still cash from the left elbow, I think he'll be in the rotation no matter what. It's how much of the other stuff maintains or gets better, right? If his three-point shot's up to league average, or if he buys in on D, or hasn't lost a step because of the injury. It's that kind of stuff that if it all turns up the good way for him, that he'll play a lot. And if not so much, then he could be playing, you know, 15 minutes off the bench or 10 minutes off the bench even if it goes that way. So it's kind of harder to predict his season because of the injuries and the roster flux. But I think he's an interesting player with a unique skill set. So looking forward to seeing how the Pacers fit him in. But yeah, Jeremy Lamb, good. Overall, I'd grade his season with the Pacers probably like a B minus. The injury obviously hurts his grade. It's not his fault, but not being there in the playoffs sucks, and they didn't get the production they would have liked, but it is what it is. So we'll see what comes up next for him. I think he played about to be expected, though. Looking forward to seeing what he can do next season and in the role that he was expected to be, the off-the-bench scorer, not the starter. So lots of stuff to watch out for with Jeremy Lamb next season. Stick around, and we'll cover it all in this podcast. Look out for Adam's show covering TJ Warren season tomorrow, and whatever topic we decide we want to do for our non-player recap show later in this week. Thank you guys so much for listening, and we will see you tomorrow.